Welcome to the Climate Report on WFMP FM Louisville. This is Hart Hagen, your host, and we are on episode number 90. Today's topic is The New Congress, Part 2. We'll be talking about the new Congress in a few minutes, but first, here's what the Climate Report is all about. We believe that climate change is real. Climate change is a problem we can solve and that we must solve it urgently. The worst effects of climate change are not in the distant future. In fact, the effects of climate change are already on us in terms of stronger hurricanes, hotter droughts, longer droughts, and the consequences that go with that, as well as wildfires. Record wildfires recently in California, not to mention the acidification of the oceans and the warming of the oceans and the dying off of the coral reefs. But the worst effects of climate change are not in the distant future. You hear people talking about, well, this is something our grandchildren will have to deal with. No, we will have to deal with it in our lifetime. Furthermore, the point of no return is not in the distant future. The point of no return refers to a point in time and a set of circumstances whereby we've lost control of the climate. Believe me, we don't want to go there. The great news is we have an opportunity to create a whole new world. A better world, a world with thriving local economies, and a world where there is true opportunity and true equality. But in order to get there, we must understand the exact nature of the problem at hand. Not least of all, we must understand the nature and the extent of corporate power. Because climate change is a political problem, and solving the problem is going to involve a political solution, we must understand corporate power, because these giant, not small corporations, not local businesses, but these giant corporations that are inconceivably big, well, they have all the power. And the power that they have is entirely inconsistent with your freedom or mine. The power that they have is entirely inconsistent with anything remotely resembling democracy. Big corporations and the corporate world as a whole is entirely anti-democratic. They are at war with democracy. And if you haven't heard of this war, it's because they don't want you to know. But that's why the Climate Report exists, and that's why, in addition to wherever you get your information, most of us get some of our information from the mainstream media. You can't avoid it. Most of us get some of our information from the cable news. Most of us get some of our information from the national newspapers like the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times and the Washington Post, and whatever trickles down to local papers like the Courier Journal, and whatever trickles down to our Facebook feeds. Most of us get some of our information from the commercial media, but we also need to get some of our information from what I call reality-based sources. My reality-based sources include Noam Chomsky, Naomi Klein, Chris Hedges, Ralph Nader, Jeffrey Sachs, and Michael Parenti. Other authors I've discovered recently include Dana Frank and William Bloom. Now, you're going to have a different list from mine, but you need to have reality-based sources because the mainstream media, the commercial media, they're not reality-based sources. You can find some factual information in those sources, But at the end of the day, they're trying to teach you a worldview that is inconsistent with reality. They don't want you to know the reality of what's called the free market system. They don't want you to know the reality of our environmental challenges. They don't want you to know the reality of our war machine. So they are not reality-based sources. You can get facts and information from them, but get some of your information from reality-based sources. Another reality-based source I would like to mention is a newly announced presidential candidate by the name of Tulsi Gabbard. Now, I'm not going to endorse Tulsi Gabbard because I can't endorse any candidates on this show, but she is what I would consider to be a reality-based source. Her statements and the things that she talks about are consistent with reality, as opposed to other candidates who talk out of both sides of their mouths because they're beholden to corporations and they say things that are untrue, and more importantly, they omit things that you would like to know if this were a reality-based conversation. So on the Climate Report, we want to be that reality-based source for you. You won't agree with everything I say, but what I'm sharing with you is fundamentally rooted in reality and not fundamentally rooted in the fantasy land that the corporations of the world want you to believe in. The fantasy land that the corporations of the world want you to believe in includes ideas like, you know, climate change is not urgent, maybe it's real, but we can just kind of drag our heels and we can sell you all these hamburgers and that has no impact on the environment, and we can just continue to consume and consume and consume all this oil and buy a Prius if you want to do something good for your conscience, but it's ridiculous and absurd to think we could do without cars. I mean, who in their right mind thinks that we can get around on trains? So that kind of thing, which is just kind of, it's fantasy land. So you'll decide for yourself what are your reality-based sources. But if somebody has something to sell you, then they are willing to lie. The corporations of the world have something to sell you, and they're willing to lie. And they're not just selling you products, they're selling you an entire worldview that makes them able to sell billions and billions and billions of dollars worth of stuff. But this stuff is putting our entire existence at risk. This program is part of WFMP's Public Affairs Educational Programming. The views expressed are those of the speaker and not the station. If you have any comments, questions, or feedback, please email info@theclimatereport.net. This show is also available on SoundCloud and Facebook. For more information, please email info@theclimatereport.net. Now, today's show is about the new Congress. More precisely, it's about the Green New Deal that was proposed by the new Congress. And so, what is the Green New Deal? Well, for one thing, it's a document. And the first half of the document I'm looking at is all about a transition to renewable energy. And, yeah, of course, you would expect anything called a Green New Deal to focus on a transition to renewable energy, but that's not all, because a Green New Deal is not just about green, renewable, clean energy. A Green New Deal is also about the social justice aspects of the society that we want to create. Because we're not just getting away from fossil fuels, we are getting away from an entire system of corporate-dominated power. Now, sometimes we say that we're getting away from capitalism, and there's some truth in that, but I personally am not opposed to small-scale capitalism. In fact, it's hard for me to imagine a world that does not have small-scale capitalism. In fact, the problems caused by capitalism are not primarily caused by small-scale capitalism. They're caused by the large-scale crony capitalism, corporate capitalism, these huge corporations that are not even capitalistic, because in a capitalistic system, you have the freedom to fail. But if your bank is too big to fail, or if your auto company is too big to fail, if the federal government comes along and bails you out every few years, that's not even capitalism. Now, I think capitalism does have problems, inherent problems. I think capitalism, on a large scale, capitalism is inherently racist, for one thing. But that's this whole other conversation. My main point is that when I rail against capitalism, I'm not talking about small businesses. I think one of the real harms of large-scale capitalism is that it pretends to bring to us a thriving, dynamic economy, but actually it tends to kill our economy because it tends to kill competition. So anyway, last time we talked about the transition to renewable energy. We talked about provisions like this: dramatically expanding existing renewable power sources and deploying new production capacity with the goal of meeting 100% national power demand through renewable sources. In other words, within 10 years, it's going to be 90% solar plus wind with 10% other electric sources. In 10 years, the New Deal, Green New Deal, calls for eliminating the internal combustion engine. Why? Because we must, for one thing. For another thing, the whole fossil fuel economy supports systems that dominate, where the strong dominate the weak, the rich dominate the poor. It is not democracy. Another thing we talk about in the renewable energy transition is building a national energy efficient smart grid. In other words, the lines that carry our electricity are going to be completely restructured. We're going to rework our agricultural system, because what we have is large scale agribusiness that's oriented toward exports, and it kills small farms and small businesses both at home and abroad. It's inhumane. In fact, it's cruel. If you really see what large-scale agriculture does to people's lives, you would say this has got to end. But it's like I was saying with the corporate propaganda system that we have. The big corporations don't want you to know this, so they make sure that the cable news and the national newspapers do not frequently report the fact that large agribusiness operations pollute the air, pollute the water, kill pollinators, and not least of all, they make people starve. If you really want to know what's going on, then you'll find out that agribusiness makes people starve. That's why the system that we have now is cruel and inhumane and inequitable, and it has got to go. And these corporate leviathans, these corporate beasts, have got to go. Somebody listening to my words might say, wow, this guy is really radical. But that's, these corporations want you to think that they are the lifeblood of the economy. They're not the lifeblood of the economy. They're more like the vampire that sucks the life out of the economy. The way the economy is now, every industry is a winner-take-all. It's like the game of Monopoly. Have you ever played the game of Monopoly? It's a board game, and you roll the dice, and if you land on a property that's not owned yet, you can buy that property. And then when other people land on your property, you charge them rent. And then when you land on other people's property, they charge you rent. And then when you have three of a kind, three of one type of property, then you can charge exorbitant rents. And it's a game of winner take all, because it's not a game that you can play in a few minutes, but as the game progresses, the player that has the most is going to win. And it's that way in our economy. Our economy favors the big players. National chains tend to outcompete local businesses. Big farms tend to outcompete small farms. Big restaurant chains tend to outcompete local businesses. It's a game of winner take all. It's not good for the consumer, and it's not good for the employees, and it's not good for anybody who would like to start a small business, and it's not good for our society. That's why we need to restructure, and we need to talk about what is equitable, what is fair, what is environmentally safe and environmentally smart, and we need to get away from a system that favors a few fat cats. So, let's go to Section B of the Green New Deal. Plan for the Green New Deal and the draft legislation shall recognize that a national industrial economic mobilization of this scope and scale is a historic opportunity to virtually eliminate poverty in the United States and to make prosperity, wealth, and economic security available to everyone participating in the transformation. In other words, we have a historic opportunity to do a really good thing for everybody involved. This is a large-scale transformation. This is not just tweaking a dysfunctional system. This is not just making a few changes around the edges. This is a complete transformation. And if we choose to undertake this, then it can be, for one thing, it can be the time of our lives. We can have the time of our lives in making this transformation. For another thing, we can be looking at thriving local economies, thriving small farms that grow healthy food, thriving communities of small businesses, and thriving local ecosystems. Because one thing's for sure, we have got to take control of our ecosystems. We have got to reclaim our ecosystems. For one thing, we're killing off pollinators. We cannot survive if we kill off all the pollinators, because pollinators make plant reproduction possible, and we depend on plants not only for food, but we depend on plants for every breath of air we take. We need plants, we need forests, we need pollinators. And we can have lots and lots of fun in this process, but we have to stop listening to liars and naysayers. So item one, it says here, we shall provide all members of our society across all regions and across all communities the opportunity, training, and education to be a full and equal participant in the transition, including through a job guarantee program to assure a living wage job to every person who wants one. Repeat, a living wage job to every person who wants one. So the naysayers and the guardians of business as usual love to lampoon this idea that everybody is entitled to a living wage job. They say, this is going to be so expensive. How are you going to pay for that? Translation, how are you going to pay for that? How do we pay for anything else? If it's important, we just pay for it. How do we pay $1 trillion a year for a war machine that only serves the purposes of death and destruction and environmental degradation? And how do we pay for the illnesses that we get because of all the toxic chemicals in our existence, thanks to the corporate leviathans who pollute our environment and don't want us to know about it. How do we pay for transportation? A car, on average, costs $10,000 a year to own and operate. On average, $10,000 a year to own and operate. Multiply that by two or three, if there are two or three cars in your family. We're spending a lot of money on cars. We could spend a lot less on trains and buses. But you and I weren't allowed to make that decision. It was made for us in the late 40s when it was determined, without our knowledge or consent, that there was going to be an interstate highway system which was going to cause urban sprawl and which was going to isolate all of us from one another. But that's okay because we're buying lots and lots and lots of stuff from greedy corporations. In other words, the system that we have costs us money in a lot of ways. The burden of proof is not on us to explain how we're going to pay for the Green New Deal, unless the burden of proof is also on the guardians of business as usual to defend how in the world do we pay for business as usual, $1 trillion a year for a war machine that does not protect us from anything or anybody. If you doubt that, then tell me, what does the war machine protect us from? Terrorists? How does that work? Oh, it protects us from socialists. How does that work? Oh, it protects us from narco traffickers. How does that work? The only thing the war machine protects us from is imaginary threats. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. But seriously, we got to think about what's up with a Department of Defense that has not been used for defense since 1945. Continuing to read in the Green New Deal, the congressional version, item number 2, we shall diversify local and regional economies with a particular focus on communities where the fossil fuel industry holds significant control over the labor market, to ensure that workers have the necessary tools, opportunities, and economic assistance to succeed during the energy transition. In other words, no worker is left behind. The transition is not going to fall on the backs of workers. So when the naysayers and the guardians of business as usual say, oh, this is going to lose jobs, well, they're lying, because the Green New Deal is going to provide jobs. In fact, generally speaking, if you look at business as usual, say business as usual is primarily two things. Business as usual is the oil industry and the fossil fuel industry, and business as usual is the war machine, and business as usual is agribusiness. So I know that the oil industry, when you spend $1 million on it, it provides a few jobs, but renewable energy, if you spend $1 million on it, it provides a lot of jobs, provides more jobs. Dollar for dollar, we're going to get more jobs by investing in mass transit, investing in the energy grid, investing in solar technology, and investing in wind power. Dollar for dollar, we're going to get more jobs out of that than we will ever get out of the war machine or the fossil fuel industries. So the question is, how do we pay for the worn out, tired, toxic system that we already have? The burden of proof is not on us, unless it is also on those who are defending an indefensible system. So item number 2 here is that people who currently have fossil fuel related jobs, we've got your back. That's for one thing, that's the purpose of a federal jobs guarantee. And there's also a special focus on communities where fossil fuels have historically dominated. That includes Texas, that includes Louisiana, includes the entire continental United States when you have fracking and the fossil fuel companies wanting to drill under your home without your knowledge or consent. But it also includes Eastern Kentucky. So I'm in Louisville, that's in Kentucky, and in Eastern Kentucky, and also in Western Kentucky, there's lots and lots of coal field. Coal industry has historically been big. So the Green New Deal promises that we will take care of people and communities that have historically been involved in the coal industry and the oil industry. For one thing, why can these communities not be places where solar energy is a big thing? For another thing, why can these communities not be places where people are employed restoring ecosystems? If we will get busy restoring ecosystems instead of making war on every little defenseless country around the world and strangling Cuba and strangling Venezuela and strangling Nicaragua, if we would get busy with restoring our ecosystems, then that's lots of jobs and it's lots of tourism, for one thing. We need people who understand our biological surroundings. That is much more needed and much more useful and much more vital than spending money on fighter pilots and petroleum engineers. Item number three, we will require strong enforcement of labor, workplace safety, and wage standards, labor standards, workplace safety standards, and wage standards that recognize the rights of workers to organize and unionize free of coercion, intimidation, and harassment. We also will require the creation of meaningful, quality career employment. So here's the deal. The green transition, or the Green New Deal, is not just about providing solar energy and wind energy, as important as that is, mass transit, reform of the agricultural system, as important as that is, it's an opportunity to fall back and regroup and say the system that we have is not only horrible for the environment, but it's bad for labor, it's bad for small business, it is positively racist and xenophobic. In other words, the powers that be that have to keep these polluting systems in place, these tyrannical systems of concentration of power in place, the powers that be have to play upon xenophobia and have to play upon race and fear of people. The last thing they want is international solidarity. The last thing they want is for black people, white people, Hispanic people, Asian people to see their interests as being in common, not adverse. That's why it's not just an opportunity to save the environment and to save climate. It's an opportunity to completely dismantle the power structures that have kept this racist and oppressive system in place. So I keep saying racist, and I don't have time to prove that. In fairness to anybody who's skeptical about that part, we'll have to pick that up on another episode. But the idea is that out-of-control corporate capitalism concentrates a lot of power in a very few hands, and the concentration is not getting less over time, it's getting more. We have to deal with this system. We have to eliminate the powers that be that want to keep us all enslaved. That's all for now. Thanks so much for your time. Have a good day. Hope you join me next time.